Hey, everybody. This is Kendra, the Vet Tech, and I am here today with Kristen. She's a registered veterinary technician that is a zoo technician. So we're going to learn today about what it is to be a zoo veterinary technician. So welcome, Kristen. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you for having me. My name is Kristen Provo. I am a registered veterinary technician. I've been one for about 5 years now, and I have been in a zoo since I started or since I was registered. So haven't had a ton of experience with private practice, but all of my experience is exotics and zoo. So I'm here to answer any questions that anyone may have about getting into this field.
Well, I'd like to start out today just speaking about your education. So tell us about your education process. You are a registered veterinary technician, so you went through a 2-year AVMA accredited school, but did you do anything else outside of that to kind of supplement your zoo technician education?
Aside from regular CE, and there actually is CE that is geared towards zoo technicians, which is amazing, which I can talk about a little bit later, but outside of that, not so far. So there is a specialty. There's a VTS in zoological medicine. And so I am working toward that. But you have to be in the field for 5 years before you can truly kind of start applying for those things. And it's a lot, as most of the VTS requirements are. So I am working toward that. But so far, aside from CE, there hasn't been a ton of outside education. I am really interested in ultrasound specialty as well. We do a lot of that in the zoo, so just trying to kind of make it a little easier on our veterinarians if one of us kind of is able to do that.
And you also did, Kristen, we spoke with Natalie and Joan about kind of how some technician programs work, and between the first and second year, there's the pretty extensive several hours, 400 working hours long externship, and you completed that at the zoo, right?
I did. I actually completed it at the zoo that I currently am at. So that was a huge, I would definitely suggest doing those. And to any student that is interested in this field, that's definitely a way to get your foot in the door. I met so many people. I was able to really make some connections there. So that was huge. And I learned a ton, obviously. So that was helpful. But yes, that is, I definitely did that between those 2 years as my preceptorship.
Great. So that's a good thing for you guys to think about, is if you're going to get into zoo medicine, making those connections early, getting in there when you're still a student, learning about zoo medicine and what exactly it is at a time when you have that time to spare is kind of what it boils down to. So what is a daily schedule like for you, Kristen?
That's a good question. Usually it's different all the time. We do start, I guess talking about the structure of our team would be helpful first, so you can understand kind of life is like.
Yeah, exactly. That was another thing I was going to ask, or kind of wanting to know what the staffing size or staffing needs are like at a zoo facility.
I don't think any zoo feels like they have enough staff in their animal health department.
I don't think any veterinary hospital feels like they have enough staff.
Probably very true. So we have currently 3 veterinarians, and one of them is our director of animal health as well. He's been there forever. And then we have 4 technicians, 4 registered technicians. One of those kind of takes care of animal records as well. So anytime an animal moves from one facility to another, they have a whole slew of things that they need to have with them to travel, and also with them just for the other facility to know their history.
Okay, you're talking zoo to zoo.
Zoo to zoo, yes. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. And we, I don't know how familiar everybody listening is with zoos, but AZA is a kind of an umbrella organization over accredited zoos. So we only transfer animals between ourselves and other AZA facilities. We do not sell animals or anything to any private people or get animals from private people. It's all AZA transfer. So anyway, sorry, a little sidetrack there. But so we have one technician who handles kind of gathering all the paperwork for those animals and all the things that they need to be able to go to another facility, and for those technicians and veterinarians at that facility to know their medical history. Medical records, I should say. There's a lot of daily records that get handled by other entities within the zoo that are not animal health. So But it's a big job. So we have one that does that as well as an RVT role. And then two of our RVTs cover, we have one zookeeper. So our whole team is 8 people, 3 veterinarians, 4 technicians, 1 zookeeper. So we have two RVTs who cover the zookeeper's weekend. So they kind of, we have animals that are living at the hospital, either in quarantine because they came from another facility or just for treatment, we take care of those guys.
Okay. And that's what your medical staff zookeeper is for, typically, is your animal care and husbandry in the hospital.
Yep, exactly. So they just are at the hospital. You know, which is not very common that we don't have a whole lot in the hospital, but if we don't, they are able to kind of, you know, help with special projects within the zoo and stuff like that. But it's not very common that they get time to do that. So there's plenty to do for everybody. So that's our team as of now. And it has changed even since the time I've been there. We've kind of restructured some stuff. And so it's always variable. And we just got the 3rd veterinarian, which is amazing. But we are still trying to like kind of work through having 3 all the time, which is, it's again, amazing, but still just kind of new to us. So yeah.
Anytime you change the team in any hospital setting, you have to relearn kind of how things are going to go and how your setup is going to go from here on out.
Yes. And we obviously as technicians, we learn very quickly how to work with each veterinarian. And we are so used to the 2 we have. So we're just, and we love our new one and they're great. We're just trying to all mesh together well. So that's our team. A day for us kind of is variable, but it always starts with a morning meeting. So we kind of round and talk about stuff that happened the day before, stuff we need to do that day, any scheduled things, which most of the things we try to do are scheduled. There's always, everyone knows this, there's always emergencies, there's always stuff you don't anticipate. Yeah. So try to get through those things.
Because as a zoo technician, I find this such a unique relationship because the animals don't have that usual typical, the veterinary with the client and the pet that doesn't actually belong to you. So I think that's a really interesting dynamic that you have as a zoo technician, because there's not someone, well, maybe the keeper, maybe the keepers contact you to kind of
act in our world, that's the owner to us.
Okay.
We're so thankful for that because they, are all very educated people. They're
probably much more diligent too than your typical owner. Yeah.
No, I'm so thankful for people who choose to work with pet owners, and I am a pet owner and I understand that I'm probably crazy. And I know there's plenty of them who are very, very wonderful people, but yes, I do appreciate that the zookeepers are educated on animal, you know, everything. So they know way more about their animals than I ever will. And they, you know, see them every day. They pick up on the tiniest things. They're amazing. We wouldn't be able to do anything that we do without them. So capturing restraint is up to them a lot of the time. And so, yeah, it's they're definitely like our owner in this situation, quote unquote owners.
They
have, you know, special bonds and relationships. And some of us do too with some of the animals we do. A lot of training and things like that. So we do build relationships with them as well, but definitely the keepers are kind of owners. So when we go have our morning meeting to start, we go over what we call the daily reports. And that is just reports that the keepers filled out from the day before. So anything we see on there, somebody didn't eat all their food and they normally do. Somebody's holding up their left leg. Somebody, you know, is picking on somebody else, which in our situation can sometimes mean a lot, especially like the herd animals and stuff like that. So just those little things that they're picking up on, we're able to kind of be more preventative with things than just being like, today we came in and this animal's down. So that is always super helpful. So the veterinarians will look at those, then they kind of go over what they feel like are the highlights with the rest of us at the meeting. And then we will kind of decide and plan from there if something needs to be looked at physically, if we need to go to them, if they need to be brought to the hospital, if we need to just call them on the radio and ask how they're doing that morning. So we go through those things. And then we have what we call procedures. So there's 3 days of the week when we have almost all of our staff available. So we plan procedures most of the time on those days. And what we call procedures is any anesthetic event or any manual restraint event where it's going to entail more than one person, most likely.
Okay.
So technician wise, the four of us each have a procedure day. So for example, mine is Thursday. So anything that gets scheduled on a Thursday is Kristen's responsibility. I need to set up everything we need. I need to bring it with us if we're going there for the procedure. I need to have it ready to go for the veterinarian and then assist with whatever's happening. If I need another technician, I need to figure out who is available and bring them with me, and then clean up lab samples, sending out things. All of that is on me as well. So we kind of, I know a lot of zoos have a little bit of a different structure where they'll have something like a lab technician for the day and a pharmacy technician. We have a procedure technician, and then we have a treatment technician. So I know technician appointments are a thing in small animal and in even mixed practice, I'm sure. For us, that kind of is the case for treatment type things, like especially routine treatments. So laser therapy, we do lots of laser therapy and vaccines or things like that you would normally do in clinic. That would probably be tech appointments. We do those same things. We're just usually going out to the zoo to do them. Okay. So it's sometimes the animals get brought up, but most of our patients are not manually restrainable. So we do have, obviously there's birds and small mammals, things like that, that we can hang on to, but most of them are just, we go to the area that they are. So those would be kind of technician appointments. And there is a treatment technician. We each have a treatment day. We each have a procedure day. And then the other days that we are there, we're kind of just filling in the pharmacy, the lab, with procedures, whatever needs to be kind of supplemented.
Yeah, there's always a lot going on.
Yes. So yeah, that's pretty much, I don't know if that was at all cohesive with what a normal day looks like, but there really isn't a normal day. So we definitely start with meeting. That's pretty much our only
meeting. Okay.
We have one meeting, and after that, we kind of just disperse.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's whatever happens.
Exactly. Okay. Sometimes I always joke I won't see the rest of my team until the end of the day again.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, I can speak from private practice, that happens for us too.
Yes.
It's like, wow.
I can imagine that.
I didn't even know you were working today and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
So yes, exactly. We can all relate to that for sure. But that's great. I think that gives us a great window into kind of what goes on. You know, you're still operating as a highly functional registered veterinary technician with lots of responsibilities.
Yes.
And
for sure,
all the things that go into being a regular veterinary technician, you're just doing them on a different scale and in a different way than what I would very hesitantly use the word normal here. But, you know, zoo jobs and zoo technicians are a small corner. There's not tons of jobs. There's not tons of opportunities there. So this is a small peek into something that a lot of people don't know a lot about. So this is great.
I think that all sounded great. Very accurate. Yes.
Good.
Do you get to, I think a lot of times it's thought like in the zoo that you aren't going to get to use your skills and you aren't going to get to quite do as much because of just the nature of the patients that you see, but you really, really do. And it's really a lot of things that probably won't get to see a lot of times in small animal and in regular practice. Just the cases, I don't know how to explain it in a way that's not like,
you
know.
Can use cliches if you need to. We've used cliches on this show before, so don't worry about that.
But well, it's different all the time. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, I think
you get utilized.
Yeah. And I think different all the time, that would be great. But you know, I'm one of those people that I really enjoy seeing something different all the time. The monotony really kind of drives me crazy. So
I'm with you.
So we talked a little bit about your general anesthesia with your awake procedures when you were kind of chatting about what your daily schedule looks like. So you as a technician, it sounds like you get one day a week where you do these general anesthetic procedures, but are they being done multiple days per week though, it sounds like?
Yes, for sure. And sometimes more than one in a day. So I'll have two or three on my procedure day. Also, on the weekends when we have less staff, if there are any, we get pulled into those. So it's not like you're like, oh, here's my one day a week to do my anesthetic monitoring and all of those things, you get lots of opportunities, and you can always sneak in on other people's to watch. We do that, or just participate, you know. And most of the time, other technicians are very thankful for that, because we always have lots of keepers. And in the zoo, you don't think about it, but there's a lot of media stuff that we do. So sometimes there's cameras, sometimes there's, you know, everyone knows now there's shows about almost every zoo. So we have zookeepers, we have cameras, we have students, our own students, veterinary preceptors, and also our RVT interns. So there's a lot of people to keep track of. So sometimes as the technician that's in charge, you're like, I need a second hand here, second pair of eyes to just keep an eye on everybody, because there's a lot of things that, you know, we might have a gorilla on the table and we just need to make sure that everyone is aware of what is allowed and what they should be doing. And it's very before we go into those, that everyone knows their job and their place and what their plan is.
And you guys have, and again, I don't want to generalize regular practice, right? To say, right. Oh, we always just do spays and neuters and dentals, because there are very many other procedures things that go into that. But, you know, when we think of a routine small animal practice, that's what we think of, right? Our just the elective spay, neuter, and dentistry. So for you guys, with so many different species, and some of the species do have to be anesthetized for you to do certain things to them, is that right?
Yes.
What kind of things are routine general anesthesia for you that is maybe not seen as a general anesthetic event?
Yeah. So
in other practices.
That is a great question. So radiographs is definitely one. There's a lot of places that will radiograph birds anesthetized. We actually don't. One of my favorite things that I have learned so far is that if you just move really slow with birds, and actually most small little mammals and things that are terrified and think that they've been caught and are going to be eaten. If you move really slow and you keep it dark, we can get them. I mean, you can ask them to do almost anything and they'll do it. So we don't anesthetize birds for radiographs, but that is a good example of, like, for example, a tiger. We're going to have to anesthetize that thing for radiographs or for anything. So we do, you talked about spays and neuters, our kind of routine. We have what we call routine immobilizations. And so all of our megavertebrates, basically, we do kind of biannual routine exams is what we call them. So we'll do kind of everything we can possibly do under anesthesia to get a good baseline again. And that's
okay.
Every 2 years for that animal. So we do all of our big cats, all of our great apes, and we kind of trade off years for those guys because we have a lot of them.
Yeah.
And during those, so we'll do things like, we'll do endoscopy, we'll do radiographs, we'll do ultrasound, we'll collect blood, and our testing lists are huge. So we have all kinds of crazy stuff that we're looking for in those. But it's always got to be, for those things, it always has to be an anesthetic event. There are some things that we can do without. Blood collection is the thing that we really work on, and a lot of ultrasound that is voluntary. All of our what we call code red animals or hot animals at some places, that's what they call them. So anything that basically can kill you, which is most things that we work with.
Yeah.
Great apes, big cats, elephants, everything that is dangerous, what we call dangerous animals. We work in what we call protected contact with them. So those animals are the ones that are going to need to be anesthetized for sure. Our elephants, actually, no, I'm getting on another rabbit trail here, but they are trained very well by our keepers to present different, you know, we can do radiographs awake on them. We can do blood collection. We could ultrasound if we needed to. We've biopsied them awake. So they are very well trained. And elephant anesthesia is usually not done unless it's truly like a something you can't do. A lot of times they have issues with teeth, tusks and stuff like that. So those things we definitely need to anesthetize them for. But as far as routine exams for them, they are awake. They're our only dangerous animal though that is awake for routine exams.
Yeah, that's a lot of animal to anesthetize for.
Yes, it is. And I know I totally missed several things we do on our routine exams. They are super thorough. We have a to-do sheet that I probably should have put in front of me so I could read off of it, but.
Well, I think that's a great.
Anything.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great overview though. And, a great comparison where you're using general anesthesia for, like you said, some of your dangerous creatures to do these things that we consider normal in small animal practice, right?
Yes.
Everybody just brings their dog in once a year. We do their exam. No big deal.
Right.
But this requires general anesthesia for you guys to do this great in-depth comprehensive exam for these animals.
The other thing I should mention too is to think about with that is sometimes the conditions that we treat that would be very easy to treat in small animal practice or large animal are not easy in the zoo. And so things like cage rest and stuff are not always plausible. Casts, we can't cast a tiger and, you know, let him go. That's not going to work. So kind of thinking outside the box all the time on how to treat and how to deal with issues. And sometimes it's frustrating and sad, but there's not a good way to deal with, you know, something that would be so simple in a dog to treat. We just don't have a way to do that in any specific taxa that we have. So it's always fun to try to think of ways we can figure out other methods.
Sounds like you guys have a pretty good network.
Absolutely. Yes. We utilize a listserv for the veterinarians and then also for the technicians. So we have yearly conferences and things. So we definitely share information and everybody's very willing to help. It's a great, great community. Small, but really, really, really great.
Well, we've talked a lot about things that kind of happen in your day and your staffing. What kind of type of people are on your staff has been brought up a couple of different times. So I just want to take this time to clarify here that zoos only hire credentialed technicians, correct? I didn't hear an assistant outside of your zookeeper that kind of takes care of your quarantine and hospitalized animals. You really need those credentials in order to be appropriately utilized on a zoo medical team.
Right. So I can't say that every zoo will only hire registered technicians. AZA accredited facilities, most of the time, that's what they're looking for. We've talked a ton about obviously how busy it is and how crazy it is in all situations. The zoo is not any different. So there's not a ton of time to teach the basic things. You know, you need to come in knowing how to monitor anesthesia. You need to know how to make sure that you understand the physiology of what's happening and why you're treating and what's going on and drugs. Pharmacology is huge. There's just not a lot of time for it and there's not a lot of people to teach you those things. So coming in with that knowledge is huge and really important. We do our best as technicians to really teach our students as we go along. Some of us are better. I will self-admit I'm the worst with explaining what I'm doing. I know all of us technicians are just like, I just need to get it done. I just need to do this. So it's hard for me. We do have some that are amazing with students though. So don't feel like that's going to happen to you if you are a student. And I thankfully had great people and I have gotten much better in my time, feeling more comfortable teaching as I go along. So I haven't, you know, met a lot of people in the zoo who don't enjoy kind of explaining to you what's going on. So,
but you're right. As technicians, I feel like we all have that ingrained, deep seated. I just really need to get this done right now.
Yes. Yes. So patience, I'm learning patience with the students, but yeah, I really love having them. It reminds me, I tell them every time, it reminds me how cool the stuff that I get to do every day is.
Yeah.
Just there being like, I'm like, you know, right next to a lion or something. And you're like, oh yeah, that's true. You are.
You're like, psh, this is my third lion this week.
Pretty much. But then it really does bring you back whenever they're excited. And you're like, I'm excited too. What did you even ask me?
It's okay. So we were talking about credentialed technicians being employed.
Okay. That's right. So yeah, the basis of knowledge is super important to have. RVTs already come with all of that from school. So our veterinarian is definitely, our director of animal health he will only hire registered veterinary technicians. Most of the jobs, when you look on AZA, the website, there are a lot of jobs all posted on there for accredited zoos. Most of them are for registered technicians or licensed, credentialed, whatever. So
yeah. And so this wraps this wraps it all up for us, guys, again, or brings us back to that point again that's been touched on in a few different episodes on the podcast here, that the credentialed technician understands the why behind what we're doing. And that's what Kristen alluded to a little bit earlier, is you understand the physiology of what exactly is going on, and you already have that baseline knowledge. And like Joan said, you have that skill set that has been standardized and taught to you. And so that's what these zoos are looking for, because as Kristen also told us earlier, she is very heavily utilized in some ways, given her own set of responsibilities and schedule that she's just expected to do and get done. So having this baseline knowledge already coming in is huge, not just for the employer, but for her.
Absolutely. I agree with all of that. And also, you can get paid more. As a registered technician, you can definitely be a little bit more valuable to your practice.
Yes. So what tips do you have then for any students, prospective students, or even current credential technicians who are wanting to go into zoo medicine?
There are a lot of them. That's definitely, I mean, I got super lucky in how I got into this position, and I actually covered somebody's maternity leave straight out of school. I took boards, and the next week they asked me to come cover a maternity leave, and I ended up being able to work it out where I stayed, but that is not common. So I would
right place, right time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I would say definitely don't give up. It's a small field, and people, when they get these jobs, they hang on to them. So I understand that it can be discouraging sometimes, but don't give it up. I've seen lots of students that are really gung-ho and then kind of just realize that it's hard, and they, you know, get sucked into something else, which is okay. I mean, we need people to do everything, obviously, but if you're truly, truly into it, don't give it up. AZVT, the Association of Zoo Veterinary Technicians, go to that conference. That is huge. There are connections there. Those people are the people that are going to give you a job. It's pretty much almost every zoo is represented that is accredited in the country at those, and they send at least a couple technicians or one or and it's really interesting to hear. We have what I just told you is our structure. That is super different from, you know, some other zoo. Some of them don't even have a veterinarian on grounds all the time. It's a part-time person that comes in or something. And those technicians are definitely running the show at those places. So it's really interesting to talk to people and just see what is out there, what the options are, and then just obviously, like any other part of this profession, networking, huge, huge for you. So definitely doing that. Internships, like I had said, I did the one with my zoo. That got my foot in the door as far as AZVT, because I wrote a paper that was part of their, AZVT has a scholarship program called the Lori Page Peck Scholarship for students. You can write a scholarly paper, and then if you win, you get to present it at the conference, which is amazing. And you make tons. I mean, everybody knows who you are at that point because they watched you present your paper. So anybody that has openings, previous technicians that have won too, gotten job offers at the conference just because they were, I mean, took the initiative and you interned and you wrote a paper and you're there and you presented it. And clearly,
clearly you're dedicated
wanting,
at that point.
Wanting to be in that field. Yeah. So definitely recommend that. The best way to do that is to intern in a zoo, because your topic then will be relative to zoos. So now I'm actually on the committee who chooses the winner.
Oh,
so I can tell you it is great to have a paper that's going to apply to everybody that's at the conference. Obviously, you can come and present about like a domestic animal case, and most of us have some domestics in the zoo, but definitely an internship will help you have a little window into some case that you can, or a project or whatever you feel, and get on the website, look up kind of the parameters of that if you're interested, for sure. And if anyone has questions, they can feel free to contact me.
You go. Got a good in here with
definitely.
A zoo scholarship board member. Great.
So that is a huge, I think that I always tell all of my students, definitely get to AZVT, apply for the Lori Page Beck Scholarship, those things will be huge for you. And then 100% of this for me is personality. I know that it's so important to love going to work. I am so thankful I have a team that we get along great. All of us just mesh well, which is very uncommon, I realize. Thankfully, we just happen to work that way. I know there's a lot of times when that's not the case, but also I tell all my students, it's all about your personality, your attitude, the way that you take things, the way that you take criticism, because that is what being a student is about. Is I feel like 80% is just kind of people telling you, okay, that's okay, but also you should try that, you know, and that's why you're there. Exactly why you're there. Especially
like you mentioned earlier with having a new doctor come on, and we all know what it's like to have worked with certain doctors and then have a different doctor. It's that way across the board. So
absolutely.
From one technician to the next, I mean, the big one that I remember a lot from primarily small animal practice is we all tape in our IV catheters differently. Right. And so it's like this thing, you know, this is how so-and-so, but it's that way for everything you do. Mm-hmm. And when you're going through different technicians supervising you, they're going to say, oh, well, that's weird. Why are you doing it that way? Mm-hmm. And that's just what being a student is. You're right. You have to be able to take that with a grain of salt, roll with it, and move on.
Yes, absolutely. I tell everybody that, and just, you know, take it as an opportunity to learn different ways to do things, because one of us is going to have you help us do something, and then the next one's going to come along and say, what are you doing? And then they'll say, oh, this so-and-so showed me, and I'll say, okay, well, that's okay. Just take it as a way to learn several ways to do things. That is totally fine. If it gets the job done, then it's okay. But my supervisor, our director, always has said, you can teach skills, but you cannot teach anybody to have a good personality. So that's just half the battle right there, is trying to get along with others and make sure that you are somebody that is teachable and you can work hard. I can't stress that enough. Initiative is huge. Obviously not doing things that you shouldn't be doing or anything like that, but
good examples are, if you know that tomorrow you're going to be doing a certain procedure, going home the night before, mm-hmm. reading up on it, being prepared with knowledgeable questions, or, you know, being able to provide input. Those are things where you can express initiative in a safe way that also says, look, I really want this.
That is so true. So true. And I know it can wear you out, you know, to feel like you have to do that every day or anything, but that is huge. And just having a general knowledge, because we get some students in that we have an interview process for our internship and all those things, but we get some in that don't really have a ton of experience, which is okay. That's another thing to remember. It's just, we don't expect you to know everything. That's why you're there. You're there to learn. We expect you to know the basic things that you should know after a year in school. Basically, we don't need to teach you math, and we can't have time to teach you those things, but we don't expect you to know everything about chimpanzees for a chimpanzee immobilization. And we'll tell you that, and we'll explain to you, you know, what it's going to be like. I always stress to them, review the drugs that we're going to use tomorrow. Make sure you know anesthetically what it's going to do to that patient, so nobody's worried or upset.
Surprised.
Yes, exactly. So yes, initiative is huge. But yeah, I would just say personality is such a big thing to me, especially. And I know it's just big a lot of places. And so being teachable, being coachable, and having just a great attitude and initiative that's what's going to get you hired.
Yeah. And those are all free things, and you don't have to go to school
absolutely.
For that or buy it or
right.
show the up and have
a good
attitude.
One thing I will say, I forgot to mention this, AZVT also does have a resource for finding zoos that have internships.
Oh.
Yeah. So you can get on there. They have a little menu drop down, I think, or something like that. And it has all the zoos that currently have internships available too. And it will kind of specify if they're looking for somebody in school or if it can be somebody who's already graduated. We currently have several sessions available. So we're doing year round now. We used to just do a summer session, just because there's a lot of we've noticed lately there's a lot of tech schools that are kind of having their internships at different times of the year.
Yeah, a lot of the private schools run their years a little bit differently, so you'll see that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we decided to expand that just to give everybody a little more opportunity. I think there's a few other zoos that are doing that. So definitely check. The other thing I will say is that most of them are unpaid, unfortunately. Most zoos are nonprofit organizations. We don't have tons of extra money. So a lot of times we can help you with housing and stuff like that, or at least find resources for you. Most people who do our internships don't live where we are. So there's a lot of, that's obviously dedication if you're traveling for a free internship.
Well, but like you said, you have to weigh for the reward here. You know, I mean, right. If it's a foot in the door for you in a small, small area of the field, sometimes right. You got to do what you got to do.
Exactly. And in no way is like to be disrespectful at all. It's just kind of the way of zoos. And also I should mention too, if you are in this for the money, don't work at the zoo. Also just don't be a RVC.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've already touched on this before in other episodes. None of this is about making the big bucks.
Absolutely not. And I, you know, am silly and married a zookeeper. So we're really just not in it for the money at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Zookeepers make even less.
they sure do. So I would definitely say it doesn't compare to like waking up every day, though, and wanting to go to work and do what I do. And it's so cool and so fun and different all the time. But yes, it's not about the money. Yeah. Something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, there's something to be said for waking up every morning and mm-hmm. not dreading going to work.
Absolutely.
And honestly, that is what this career and profession as a whole boils down to, is we do what we do for the love of it. And that's the bottom line.
That's absolutely true. And if you ever find yourself waking up and feeling like you don't want to go, life is too short.
Yeah.
It's too short to deal with that. So get yourself somewhere where you want to be.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that kind of wraps us up for today, Kristen. I like to have my guest listeners leave a little tech tip or trick or life hack or whatever you'd like to call it for our listeners, something that you maybe learned on the job the hard way that was kind of life changing for you.
Yeah. So I already touched on the going slow with the little guys and even the big guys. That is something that's huge for us. We definitely get a lot of just what you can ask animals to do compared to kind of doing it the old school forceful way is really amazing and obviously better for them. And all of us want that. So that is one that I really love. But I will also say we have a special technique with bird hemostasis. I don't know how many people are working with birds, but if you do end up, you know, in a zoo or in an internship, we use medial metatarsal a lot of the time. I know a lot of people do bird jugulars. They just can be dangerous depending on. So when you do it, and this is going to be interesting for me to try to explain on a podcast, but so basically what we do is use the smallest needle that you can. I know we're not used to doing that, but birds are a little different. And what we do is kind of, once you pull your needle out, pinch the back of their leg instead of putting your finger on the phlebotomy site.
Okay.
So it kind of tightens the skin over that, and then they'll clot a little faster. There is no blood. There's no mess. You are not wiping away the clot with your finger by holding it.
Right.
Birds just clot a little differently, and it's kind of weird. But yeah, so gently pinch the back of the leg to tighten the scales over that site. And it's like this beautiful, painless, wonderful thing. And everybody will be like, oh my gosh, where did you learn to do that? So
sounds like magic. I'll definitely have to try that.
It is magic. Definitely try it. Chickens, you can do it on chickens.
Yeah, I was going to say,
everybody has chickens, right?
See some chickens every once in a while. So we'll have to try that. Definitely.
It is a great, great trick. So yeah. And thinking outside the box, I don't know. I have too many tips.
Well, I feel like this whole episode has turned into a long list of tips, but that was a really great one to end on.
Thank you.
Kind of an in-practice tip. That's awesome. Well, that wraps us up for our zoo episode today, guys. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you. And I, myself, learned so much about getting started in veterinary medicine.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. If anybody has any questions, Kendra can have my contact information for you. But I hope to see some of you in my field someday soon, and keep on keeping on.
And you can find me at Kendra the Vet Tech on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any questions or any podcast episode ideas for topics in the future that you'd like to learn more about, it can be reached at kendrathevettech@gmail.com. Thanks, guys.